Morning, church. It's good to be here with you guys today. As I said earlier, my name's Grant. I'm the student pastor. I grew up in Georgia and Florida, and then I went to a small liberal arts Christian school in Arkansas, then moved to Denver, Colorado, where I spent 3 years pursuing my master's at Denver Seminary. And then afterwards, I moved here. I was called to this church, and you know, if I had to leave the mountains, I might as well go to the beach, right? And I came here. I've been here for about a year and a half. I'm married with one child, one on the way. My daughter's name is Lively. She's about yay tall. And another baby named Felicity on the way, about that big. And so it's a privilege to be here with you guys today. I consider it an honor to be able to talk to you guys about this subject. And, you know, as a youth pastor, we get a chance to do amazing things. I mean, specifically every summer, we get to travel all over the place. I grew up traveling a lot, and I love to travel. I love seeing different parts of the country. I think God created me in a very specific way, maybe not created me, he formed me in a very specific way as I was growing up. Moving from place to place, I got a chance to get a lot of different perspectives on, you know, how America works, on what it's like to live in a small city, what it's like to live in a big city, mountains, beach, etc. I've been all over the place. I've gotten a lot of different perspectives. But as I've been here at Trinity, I got a chance to go to Nicaragua with some of our cream of the crop students in our high school youth group. And talk about a perspective change. I mean, I've seen lots of places in America, but seeing Nicaragua is just a completely different experience. And so last year we had an experience to go, and my eyes were just open to see how these people live in Nicaragua. And then this year we went back, and we got a chance to see even more about what everyday life is like in Nicaragua. Because last year we stayed at the church primarily the whole time, and this year we actually went into the neighborhoods. We went inside people's houses. Pastor Francisco is our is this pastor that we work with down there. And Pastor Francisco one day, he looks at me, he's like, Grant, there are people in our church who are sick, and I want to go pray for them. And would you help pray for them with me? And I was like, our youth group would love to do that, sure. And he said, and there's also people in our church who haven't been here for a long time. I want to go visit them too. And there are also people who've never been to our church, and I want to visit them too. And so we all hop on the bus, like about 20 people. We get on this bus and we drive to downtown Muelle de Bois, which is this tiny little like rural city. And we're in the downtown area, you know, brick streets, concrete buildings. And we walk into this first person's house, and this woman, she's sitting on a chair. And we talk to her a little bit. We find out that she's having she's in pain and she has a hard time walking. And so she's talking to us a little bit through a translator. And then Pastor Francisco looks at me and he's like, you want to pray for her? I'm like, okay. So we all like lay our hands on her. And I prayed for healing for this woman. I've prayed for people's healing, but there was something unlike it in this situation. I mean, I've just never been anywhere like that. And then I thought, all right, good. We prayed for healing. Let's go. You know, let's move on. Let's go back to the church. And Pastor Francisco's like, all right, next door. And we literally walked out of the house and went into the next person's house, like the next door neighbors. And we entered this tiny square room. Just barely big enough to hold 20 people. Barely big enough. I mean, and there's maybe one window. And so I have, my dad gave me jeans that make me sweat. Not like pants, but, you know, like jeans where I sweat like crazy. And I'm just pouring down sweat, just like trying to appreciate this cross-cultural experience. But I'm hot. I'm like, it's like uncomfortably hot. And we're all standing there in this one little like square room. And there's this man, he's probably in his 60s. And he's got one leg that's shorter than the other. And he sort of walks around like this. And, you know, maybe he was in the Civil War in Nicaragua. I don't know. But he looked like, you know, he's nearing maybe a little bit towards the end of his life. And Pastor Francisco, he asked, you know, the man to share a little bit of his story. He did. And then we had a couple of our senior students share their testimony with him. And he just sat there and he just listened and smiled and enjoyed hearing from our students, you know, how God has changed their lives. And then Pastor Francisco looks at him, and he said, hey, would you like some prayer? And I'll never forget it. The man looked at Pastor Francisco, and he said, yeah, I'd like to pray for Israel and the conflict over there. And I remember seeing that, and I looked at him, and I thought, this man, he's living in this tiny little square box. You know, he's probably lived here maybe his whole life. And he's got this, like, you know, crippled leg, and, you know, who knows what kind of prayer requests he probably could receive for himself. And he's asking us to pray for people on the other side of the world who are suffering. And so our youth group got the privilege of just praying for the conflict over in Israel, and we prayed for peace among the Palestinians and the Israelites, and Palestinians and Israelites. And it was an incredible experience. And I realized that we in America, we have a very different theory of life. Like, we look at life a different way. We have these glasses that we see the world with. And in other places around the world, many of you have traveled to other countries, we see that everywhere else people wear different glasses. You follow me? People look at the world differently in different countries. And today, like I said, I don't get a chance to preach very often, and I have no idea why I picked this subject today, because it's not a fun subject to preach on. I mean, if I'm going to preach, you know, I might as well find something really exciting to preach about, but this isn't one of those subjects. Today, I want to talk to you about suffering. I want to talk to you about how we deal with suffering. I want to talk to you about how the Lord is refining us. And so we've titled this sermon Refiner's Fire, because the Lord is refining us through struggles, but we don't want struggle, do we? I mean, in general, like the American glasses, the theory and how we see the world and how we approach life, the American way, is to avoid suffering at all costs. Just avoid it entirely. You know, like whatever we can do to avoid suffering, that's what we want. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. You know, do whatever it takes to get the most happiness and comfort and pleasure as we can before we hit the end of this world. Now, this is a very secular worldview, but we as Christians, we're products of our culture in America, and we have this lens too. We see the world the same way. Our job, like the way we think, is how can we go through life with as little suffering and struggle as possible? And I can prove it to you that it's not just a non-Christian thing. I mean, it's something that all of us deal with. Why is it that we're always looking to see, if I could just get a little bit more money, I'd be able to buy this furniture or fix this part of my house, or I'd be able to get just a little bit of a nicer car, or I'd like to sell my house and get a little bit nicer house. You know, maybe I would like to get a little bit of a promotion, or, you know, like to go up in the world. I mean, you know, this idea that, you know, the goal of life is to just be a little bit happier, to just have a little bit more, and, you know, we'll be happy. We had this college student come and speak to our high schoolers just a few weeks ago. And this guy, he showed up and he shared his testimony to our youth group. He grew up in a Christian home. He grew up with amazing parents. He went to college, and once he got freedom, he sat there and told our youth group, he's like, I pursued happiness in every way possible. You know, through drinking, chasing women, through popularity. I did what it took to try and just get as much comfort and happiness and pleasure in my life as possible. And what he found, and this was an incredible story to hear, is that it didn't lead him to more happiness, and it didn't make him a better person. And in fact, he came back at the end of that semester miserable. Just miserable, because he was just pursuing happiness, and that doesn't work. The reason why this worldview, this theory on life, to just pursue happiness and comfort, the reason it doesn't work is because it doesn't match up with reality. It's not reality that your life is, the only purpose of life is to pursue happiness. Because in reality, we all suffer, right? In reality, everyone suffers. And to try and avoid it at all costs is just denying the inevitable. Suffering will happen. And so I want to give you a different perspective on suffering. I want you to think about it in a different way so that you can actually handle it. Since the beginning of time, since the fall of man, there's been suffering that has entered the world. There's suffering and problems and difficulties because of sin. And often as Christians, we want to polarize things. We want to say, like, it's us versus them, and we're the good guys, and they're the bad guys. You know, when there's communism, the communists, they're the evil ones, and we're the good guys. Or, you know, like after 9/11, you know, we're the good guys, and the Arabs are the bad guys. You know, or there's this polarization between the rich and the poor. You know, the rich are the bad guys and the poor are the good guys. Or maybe the other way around. And we always want to say they're the ones that are the problem. There's problems and sin and suffering in the world because of them. And we want to draw this line down the middle, but really this line needs to be drawn right down the middle of ourselves. Saying we're broken. We have our own problems. We're part of the reason for suffering in the world. So we can't avoid suffering at all costs, and so instead, let's match reality. Let's realize that suffering will happen, and when it does, let's talk about how to handle it. So in life, the best things come from a little bit of struggle, right? The best things in life come from struggle and hard work. For instance, if I want to become a muscle, you know, like a big buff guy that really impresses you with my muscles, you can tell I haven't done this yet. But if I wanted to, I would lift weights, right? Now, any of you guys who lift weights, does it feel good when you're doing it? Not really. You know, your muscles are breaking down. You know, you're like, should I go to 20? I don't think so. But yeah, I will, you know? So you're breaking down your muscles, but through that suffering, your muscles regrow and they get bigger. Exercising. If you see me running, I'm not a big fan of running. If you see me running, you better run too, because there's something chasing me. But in reality, when you're running, you're like, this is horrible, I hate this. But afterwards, you feel better, right? Eating healthy. You want to have a good-looking body, you have to be disciplined, and you have to suffer by not eating every piece of cake you see. If you want good grades, students, if you want good grades, if you want to be smarter, you actually have to put in the pain and suffering of studying. Do you hear that? You have to study, and that's suffering. You know, that's painful, but there's payoff. You become smarter, and you get better grades because of it. If you want a beautiful lawn, you have to put in the hard work in the Virginia sun to make your long lawn look better, your yard look better. If you want a beautiful wife, you got to work really hard at, you know, impressing her and saying the right things and opening the doors and taking her to dinner, you know. Everything requires a little bit of suffering. Don't tell Brittany I said that. That analogy will not work in the next sermon. All right, so today I want to look at this passage, what the Bible has to say about this subject. In your struggle, this is chapter 12, verse 4 of Hebrews. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And you have forgotten the word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. Now, did you hear that word there? It says, this is a word of encouragement. Doesn't really feel like it, but it is. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship, verse 7, endure hardship and discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? Okay, so we have this analogy here of this father and his children. Now, this is an analogy most of us can relate to because most of us have been children at some point in our life, right? Even if you're not a father, you understand this father-son type relationship, this parent-child relationship. Now, the word here for hardship, or I mean, the word here for discipline, This word discipline sort of like puts a bad taste in my mouth because I was disciplined a lot as a child. My dad was an awesome disciplinarian. For instance, whenever I made a mistake, like I did something really wrong, you know, I hit my sister, he'd say, son, go to your room. And I'd like run upstairs, go to my room. And he'd make me sit there for like 10 minutes. And I always thought that was part of the punishment. You know, it was like, man, he's just making me, you know, like he's making me sweat it out. I found out later, he was just trying to cool off himself so he didn't really like take it out on me. You know, he was trying to be patient himself, but I thought it was part of the punishment. I'm like pacing in my room, like this is gonna hurt so bad, this is gonna be so awful. You know, and he comes in, and my dad's like this big man, you know, he walks in, he's like, son, go to the bed. I'm like, okay, you know, I like walk over. And he like pulls off his belt or whatever he used to spank me, and he would just spank me, usually about like 5 or 6 times. And don't feel bad for me, I deserved it every time. I promise you, I always deserved it. But he would spank me, and that was his form of discipline. Now, I look back and I thank the Lord for that discipline because it made me the man I am today. And every time after he spanked me, what did he do? He picked me up, he put me on his lap. My bum hurt a little bit, but he put me on his lap. He said, "Son, you know that this hurt me more than it hurt you." I'm like, "That's not true. That really hurt me. I'm sure it didn't hurt you that much." And he always said, "I love you." He said, "Do you love me?" And every time, even when I was like, "No," he's like, "Son, do you love me?" "No." "Son, say you love me." "I love you." Like, I don't know if it counts if he makes me do it, but he did. There's this father-son discipline. That's like what I think of when I think of the word discipline, but really the Greek word here is paideia. Say it with me, paideia. Paideia, the Greek word is paideia, and it's where we get the word pediatrician. And what's a pediatrician's job? But to care for the health and wellness of children. And this is the same concept that the Lord here takes with us. It's not just discipline based on how he feels at the time. It's not discipline that's just whatever feels right at the time. No, the Lord disciplines us just like a doctor, you know, takes care of his patient. What child wants to go in and get their shots, you know? But the pediatrician says, "No, this is something you need." Now, what if this child says, "No, you know, I don't want the shot. Like, I don't need it." And the doctor says, "Okay, I guess if you don't want the shot, you know, sure." No, the pediatrician is always going to say, "You know what, this is going to hurt, but you got to take it." You know, and gives you the shot. It's because the pediatrician's job is to care about this child. Even though the child doesn't understand why he or she has to experience this pain of a needle going into its leg, it's important. And the pediatrician knows. And so this is like the father-son or like parent-child relationship that the Lord has with us. Now, when we're being disciplined, for instance, we're suffering. I think that it's important for me to mention the fact that people aren't suffering out there. People are suffering right here in this room. Do you understand that? That it's not just a, "Oh yeah, later someday when I'm out there and I'm suffering." Like, there are people who are dealing with heavy things right now. You know, some of you don't remember the last time you had a productive conversation with your spouse. It always just ends in fights or in anger or misunderstanding. Some of you students don't feel like your parents love you. Can't remember the last time they said they love you. Or maybe you just feel completely neglected. Maybe there's some of you who are struggling to find a way to pay the bills. You know, your house payments come every month and it's just a struggle financially for you to stay afloat. Maybe some of you are suffering in ways that I really don't even want to talk about right now. Students who are cutting themselves because it's the only way they can feel pain and it's their only way that they have any kind of control in their life. Or eating, the way you eat, you know, like trying to avoid food, you know, so that you can have some sort of control over your body. I mean, there's all sorts of pain and suffering, and it happens right here in this room, and it happens in my life too. We all suffer and we all deal with this. And the common response to suffering is, "Why God?" And you get angry at him and you distrust him and you don't want to follow him and you run away. And there are two childish, inadequate responses that we have when the Lord disciplines us. When the Lord is trying to refine us and make us into more full, flourishing human beings, when the Lord is disciplining us, there are two childish responses that I want us to avoid, that I want us to get away from. And the first is to just be shattered, you know, to just fall apart and be like, "Oh my gosh, like I'm suffering and woe is me," and just go into utter despair and frustration and completely fall away from your faith or completely turn away from the Lord and embrace every kind of evil or sin that you might think of, or, you know, it's just to like be shattered. You know, and I think of it as a father and a son. It's like, "Larry, did you hit your sister?" "Yeah, Dad." "Okay, go to your room." "Okay, Dad." And you can't go to your friend's birthday party either. It's like, "No, why what? Why would you do that to me? God, you don't love me. Like, how can you be a good father? You know, and this child just like rejects this idea, this discipline. It's like, no, Lord, no. You know, and sometimes that's how we respond. And that's just a childish, immature way to respond to the Lord's suffering. And the other way to respond sometimes that's just inadequate is to just put on this like stoic face. You know, to just grit your teeth and bear it and act like everything's all right. It's like, Larry, did you hit your sister? Yeah, Dad, I did. Go to your room. You're not going to that birthday party. I didn't want to go to that birthday party anyway. You know, like, whatever, Dad, I don't care. And instead of being remorseful for the sin that this child commits, he hates the father for the discipline. And I don't want us to do that. If we find ourselves being disciplined, I don't want us to look to God and be frustrated with the fact that he's disciplining us. I want you guys to know that it's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to stay that way. You hear that? It's okay to not be okay. As Christians, it's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to stay that way. And my dream, my hope for the church is that this could be a place where masks fall off, where nobody is trying to impress anyone else, when no one has this stoic face on, but instead where people can just be real and honest and admit that they're struggling and that they're not, and let them know that they're not alone. There's freedom in this place. It's for freedom that Christ set us free. The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come to give you life and life to the fullest. That's Jesus. We need to be able to receive the Lord's discipline and just be honest and vulnerable and open in this place. And so those are responses that I just think don't work in the long run. When we are dealing with suffering, those are ways that we can't respond to the Lord's discipline. But we do have a positive response. I got three ideas for how we can respond positively to the Lord's discipline. And the first is to learn humility, to practice humility, to realize that maybe, just maybe, the Lord knows what he's doing. And just like when you're a little kid and you don't understand why your parents discipline you the way you do, now that you're older and you can look back, you see, oh yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I talk to students all the time about how their parents are disciplining them. And some of them, I'll just admit, and this is just a complete side note, I wasn't planning on saying this. Parents, your job is not to be your child's friend. That's not your job. Your job is to be your child's parent. Love them first, which means hard discipline. Sometimes you gotta discipline your child. You know, we have this desire, like, I want my child to like me. I want them to know I'm there for them. I got their back and tell me their secrets. But you know what? That might happen later on in life, but these students need parents who love them and are actually parents and not just friends. But that's a complete side note. Learn humility. Be willing to understand that maybe the Lord has a plan for why you're going through what you're going through. Moving around the country while I was growing up, I moved right before my senior year of high school. What a horrible time to move, right? Like, I'm gonna go into my senior year of high school with no friends, not knowing anybody in a small town, and it ended up being one of the best things for me. I learned how to communicate with people and make friends quickly and depend on the Lord. It was a good thing. At the time, you don't understand, but later you will. Practice humility. Don't say, because I don't see how the good can come out of it, there must not be any. That's such an arrogant statement. Just because I can't see how good is going to come out of the situation means that there can't be any good that comes out of it. That's an arrogant approach. Let's learn humility. The second is endure. Endure. Verse 7, endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. And this word endure, it's a very emphatic and strong word. It includes hypo, like extreme endurance, like standing firm. And I got this picture in my mind this summer. The middle schoolers and I and our leaders, we'd go to the beach every Wednesday night, and we'd go to the beach, have an awesome time. And one of the games we would play in the ocean was standing right where the waves break and just trying to, like, embrace every wave that pummeled us. You know, and the first person to like move their feet loses, and the last person to stay standing wins, right? And it usually takes about one or two waves, maybe three waves before you're on the ground and, you know, you're knocked over by a wave. It's a super fun game. You should try it sometime. But the point of it is this, is that's what this word endure means. It's to plant your feet in and be ready for these waves that come crashing in. Let them crash in. And you know what the thing is about waves? They keep coming, don't they? They just keep coming. You know, and sometimes it's low tide and it's calmer, sometimes it's high tide. Sometimes it's calm, sometimes they're big waves. And that's just like life, right? But the word for you today is just endure. Sometimes it's just endure, but you don't have to just endure. And this is the last one. First is humility. Second is endure. And the third is to seek understanding. Have you ever noticed that people all throughout the Bible are crying out to the Lord asking, why, God, why? It's okay to ask the Lord why. It's okay to not understand why things happen. And it's okay to struggle and suffer. Like I said, we don't need a face of stoicism. We just need to be real and say, why, God, and seek understanding, because there's often a reason. In fact, there's always a reason why you're going through what you're going through. Now, I don't want to quote Romans 12 to you, 12:8, you know, like all things happen for the good of those who love him. You know, like that's a great verse to put on your mug, but in real life, when you're suffering, that's not helpful, is it? You don't want a Christian just tell you, it's like, oh, don't worry, God's going to make something good come of this. That's not what I want to hear when I'm suffering. When I'm suffering, I want to know someone's there for me. I just want presence. So let's not try and ignore the fact that we're suffering. Don't avoid and pretend like, oh, everything's okay. You know, my wife left me, but whatever, God's got a plan. Like, no, but seek understanding. Be real with God. He wants to be real with you. So these are the three responses: to learn humility, to endure, and to seek understanding. But even with those three things, you're not going to be able to do it. Like I said, when you're in the midst of suffering, when you find out that a family member has cancer, or you yourself only have so long to live, when you find out that your family member, a friend, or child dies, when you find out that, you know, you're going to lose your home, lose your job, when you're in the middle of struggle and suffering, these three things still might not help you that much. In fact, you're going to be unable to apply these three things unless you look at the one who suffered first, the ultimate sufferer. Unless you look at the ultimate sufferer, who's Jesus Christ, you're not going to be able to deal with any of this stuff. You're not going to be able to endure. You're not going to be able to have humility. You're not going to be able to have humility until you look to the one who humbled himself and became human and died on a cross. You're not going to be able to endure until you see the one and look to the one who endured your shame, who endured your sin, who endured the cross. You're not going to be able to endure unless you look at the ultimate sufferer who endured sin for you. So I want us to look to Jesus. Chapter 12, verse 2, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Until you look at the ultimate sufferer, Jesus Christ himself, none of this is going to work. And so for those of you here today that, man, this is your first time, welcome. I'm Grant. Nice to meet you. This is a tough passage to hear if you don't have Christ. I get that. And I want you to know that as you're looking around, those of us who do call on the name of Christ, this is our strength. This is what gets us through. It's looking at the ultimate sufferer. Those of you who have known Christ or are getting to know him or have known him for a long time, you'll know that when you turn away from him in the storm, things only get tougher. Part of enduring is being willing to look to the cross, to read scripture, to pray, and to be in community even amidst the trial. So I have this passage, Refiner's Fire, I have this title as Refiner's Fire, and it's because the purest of gold has to be refined. When you first mine gold, it's like this ugly rock, you know, with some gold in it. It's dirty, and it's got all sorts of other elements in it. And what you have to do, you have to take all these chunks of gold, and you put them in a superheating element, and you, like, heat them up until it melts. And what happens as this gold starts to be refined is that all the impurities in this gold, they start melting away, and they actually float to the top of this superheated element. And as it rises to the top, it's called dross, and it gathers on top, and you scrape away the dross, and underneath is refined gold. And the Lord is refining you for your benefit so that you might be the purest of gold. And that's why I call it the refiner's fire, because the Lord, sometimes he's the one who actually applies the heat so that you can be the purest of gold. Thank him for that. Love him for that. Be thankful for that. So today, I'm excited to share with you some liturgy that we got a chance to do. I've done it at other churches. It actually started in Kenya, in Africa. And I thought it's an applicable liturgy for today because, for one, if there's a continent on this earth that probably has had some of the most suffering, it'd be Africa. It'd be pretty easy to put them near the top. Africans, although they suffer very much, we heard testimony last week, they're often the most joyful people in the world too. And this liturgy was written in a Kenyan church. It ended up spreading across Africa, and now it's hitting American churches as well. And it's this exciting thing. Like I said, Africans are really excited about life. They just are. I think sometimes I wish I was African. But anyway, they're excited about life. And so this is a liturgy I want us to do together. And then I'm going to invite the band up because we're going to be playing a song after this. But here's this liturgy. It's real simple. It says, all of our problems, and that's what I would say. I say what's in white, you say what's in yellow. All of our problems we send to the cross of Christ. No, don't do it yet. I'm teaching you, okay? Because we're going to do it for real. And all of our sins we send to the cross of Christ. And all the devil's works we send to the cross of Christ. And all of our hopes we set on the risen Christ. And so that's the liturgy. And now there's nothing magical that happens when we say this. It's not like some like mysterious thing, and it's not something creepy. We're not going to bust out snakes or anything like that. This is just an exciting time to throw everything on Christ because Jesus has big shoulders. When his arms were nailed to the cross, he said, throw it on me. Hand it to me, give it to me. And so I want you guys to think about what you want to throw to Christ. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you guys stand up, and we're actually going to throw it like a baseball player or a football player. We're going to throw it to the cross. So if you'd stand with me, this is how we do it. This is something that doesn't work unless we get full participation. So if you're comfortable, please do this with me. I want you guys to yell it because Jesus can handle it. All right, Ray, I'm going to take off my mic. All of our problems we send to the cross of Christ. And all of our sins, we send to the cross of Christ. And all the devil's works, we send to the cross of Christ. And all of our hopes, we set on the risen Christ. Lord be with you.